This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, I'm Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's a special episode of the Really Awful Movies podcast, episode 59B, a chat with Scott Drebbit in Calgary. He's a writer with the Daily Dead website and Deadly Magazine. His column is Drive-In Dust-Offs. And in this edition, we have twice the William Shatner with Kingdom of the Spiders and The Devil's Reign.
So we have a special guest in the Really Awful Movies podcast. We have Scott Drebbit, who is a writer for the Daily Dead. Scott, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, thank you for that lovely intro. I'm up here in down here, sideways,
Calgary. Yeah. Wild Rose Country.
Yes. And as you said, I write for Daily Dead as well as Deadly Magazine. And my main gig is doing a column called Drive-In Dust-Offs, where I cover retro movies of the drive-in era, specifically horror. And I also do various other articles for the site, covering, again, mostly retro. And I'm having a blast doing it.
Awesome. What's your personal connection to drive-ins?
My personal connection to drive-ins, I probably was going to them from the time I was five or so back in Saskatchewan. And it used to be the best feeling when my folks would come in and say, leave your jammies on, hop in the car, we're going to see an all-nighter at the drive-in, you know. The popcorn, the pop, sitting in the back seat, speakers hooked up to the window, greatest feeling in the world. Let's all go to the live. The whole nine yards. Yep. It's a whole experience going to the drive-in that a lot of this generation of kids coming up, they haven't had a chance to experience, you know, back in when drive-ins were at their peak. There was about 4,000 in North America. Now there's less than 400.
I totally agree with you. I mean, some of my fondest movie-going memories as a kid was, you know, this, just like you, you know, mom, dad saying, okay, we're going to the drive-in. And, yeah, I mean, there's just from the minute that you kind of pulled in to the minute you pulled out, it was just, there was something so incredible. Well, some people did pull in and pull out.
I know.
Yeah. You know, in the back seat, we didn't mean.
Losing your drive-in virginity.
But I mean, there was something so incredible about the drive-in game. Now, I want to ask you, did you ever manage to stay up through both movies?
You know what? All I can remember from the drive-in from when I was little was watching The Big Boss with Bruce Lee.
Oh, yeah?
I remember that one because I remember the bad guy, or Bruce, I can't remember, throwing his canary that he had in the cage and he throws it up in the tree and it hooks onto the tree branch. That image is always stuck in my head for the past 40 years. Other than that, I think the other one that sticks in my head, I think, is Rabbit by David Cronenberg.
David Cronenberg, yeah, wow.
You saw that?
That shit-ass crazy mall scene where everything goes chaotic, that sticks in my head too. Everything else, no, forget it. But of the drive-in, those two stick in my head for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was sort of the cool thing about the drive-in is the fact that, like, unlike a regular cinema, you know, as a child, you could see an R-rated movie because, you know, your parents would just buy a ticket to whatever Disney film they were showing and then pull into The Brood, you know?
So, exactly. Well, my folks were very liberal when it came to our viewing experience. But again, as many parents were at that time, you can't see any sex. Mm-hmm. But someone's head getting cut off, you know, that's all right.
Well, yeah, Yeah, I mean, my mother was the same. I mean, she would, she was quite liberal. And so, yeah, we would all pile in and, you know, buy a ticket to whatever. Like, all my friends, you know, they would tell, we're going to go see, I don't know, some piece of shit PG film. But, in essence, we're going to see a good R-rated movie. Not necessarily horror, but action films. And then, but another thing is, if we were seeing a PG movie, you know, you always had those three or four other screens behind you, and one might be playing maybe Porky's or something, you know what I mean? So you would just kind of turn your head and watch that instead, you know? So you're not getting the, you know, you're not getting the sound, you're not getting the plot, but who cares? You're seeing boobs. And that was another thing about the drive and I really enjoyed.
I'm just going to get another soda, Mom. I'll
yeah, exactly.
Hour and a half later.
Yeah, indeed. So, what are your three favorite films from the drive-in era?
From the drive-in era, let me see. So, probably my first is Burnt Offerings, because it was the first horror movie that I saw in the theater when I was 6 years old, which in retrospect may be a little young to start, but it's a pretty tame movie. I can remember being in the theater seeing it with my mom. She took me, and when the chauffeur would come on screen, everyone in the audience was laughing. And I couldn't understand why the hell they were laughing at this absolutely terrifying creature in front of me. I was scared deadless.
Right.
And then, so that one, because it was my first. Probably my second would be Carpenter's Halloween. I saw that when I was 8 in the theater with my older brother. He was babysitting me. He gave the guy at the theater some sob story that we were locked out of the house, and could we just come in and watch the rest of the movie? And it worked. He was 14, I was 8. And we walked home holding each other after that movie because we were both scared shitless again. So that one's number two, probably from a technical standpoint. I just don't think that there's a better put together, streamlined prototype of what a horror film, how it should work with the combination of the music, the cinematography. It checks every single box.
Without a doubt, yeah.
That just can't be beat. Mm-hmm. For me, number three would probably be Phantasm, and I choose that one for originality. I don't think there's a more original story that ever came along. Certainly, and I mean, that came out the year after Halloween, so I think everyone at that time, that was an incredible time for horror movies, period. There was so much originality in the market, but even still, you know, there wasn't a lot of slashers yet at that point. So when this came along, Halloween had come out, you were anticipating a slasher craze, but here comes this movie about this little boy who's lost his parents, his brother's looking after him, and he's fearing the whole loss of his family, and here comes this creature called the Tall Man, a mortician who's shrinking bodies, sending him back to his planet. There's a silver ball flying around, sucking the blood out of people. They drive the most kick-ass car ever.
And it's a kick-ass band, too.
It is. It is the most kick-ass car ever, and there aren't any more of them, I don't think. If you could, it would probably cost you $200,000 to put one together. Mm-hmm. And you have this trio of guys, this little boy, his older brother, and their friend, the ice cream vendor.
Yeah, you got the balding ice cream vendor. Yep.
It's such an amazing, amazing movie.
And one thing that's also, I mean, you mentioned the music in Halloween, but the music in Phantasm, the soundtrack, is fucking incredible.
It is. It's just as good as Halloween. It's used just as good as in Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely complements and fuels the nightmares completely. I can remember the first time I saw Phantasm. We were living abroad in the Caribbean, and this was 1980, and we got one of the big ass size of a piece of furniture VCRs that probably cost $3,000 at the time.
It's good old top loaders, you know.
there was no TV down there, so we bought and rented a lot of movies. But Phantasm was one of the ones that we bought. And man, I wore that sucker dry. But the first time I saw it, and at the very end of the... We can do spoilers here, right?
Yeah, sure.
For anyone who hasn't seen Phantasm, the 36-year-old horror film, here's a spoiler. when Mike gets pulled through the mirror at the end, I'm pretty sure I almost literally shit myself.
and was
blown away and absolutely terrified by what I had just seen. Because, and so many of us were, who were of that age, who identified with Mike.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, because, you know, it's interesting because Phantasm was one of the first horror films where the protagonist, the one that we are identifying with, is a young child. You know what I mean? And that just makes it so much more terrifying. And here he is up against this nebulous character, this tall man, played incredibly by Angus Scrimm. I mean, wow, what a figure he cut in that movie. And that definitely, I mean, and you know, there's no parents, and so there's no one to really go to for safety or soccer or whatever. And it's just, it really, and it's got this amazing, like, what the fuck is happening? Like, this real sort of hallucinatory vibe about it. So yeah, Phantasm is one of the classics. And it's funny because it's the tall man, as great a character as he is, he's not up there with, you know, your Freddies, your Jasons, your Mike Myers. I think the tall man deserves a lot more props in the horror community. What do you think?
It doesn't make sense. Well, you know, Phantasm is funny. It was a hit when it came out. You know, it did quite well, especially for a film that cost like $300,000.
Mm-hmm.
It actually did pretty good. But you know what? There was such a... I don't understand why the tall man is not considered one of the icons. I think it's because the movies, other than number two, which is more of a straight-ahead action movie, but they're just so bizarre.
I agree. Yeah.
That mm-hmm. you can't slap a tag on it and go, you know, stay tuned this fall, the tall man's coming back, and then you show a picture of him and he shoves a silver sphere in someone's head and says, boy, and everyone...
Boy!
Then everyone high-fives each other and they says, well, I'm going to see that when it comes out in October. Pre-then movies for mm-hmm. horror fans,
right.
Not calendar movies that are coming out every October like a Saw or a Friday the 13th.
And you can't exactly describe it in one line like you can in Nightmare on Elm Street. Killer comes to you in your dreams. That's it. This one has so many weird elements, like between, you know, the psychic and the weird mortician and just the surreal, like, midgets and God knows what. Like, it's hard to pin down.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing,
what a different time in movies. Could you imagine pitching this movie? Okay.
Yeah.
So I got this 12-year-old kid, okay? Are you still with me? So he's in this town, and guess what? Both his parents are dead, okay? So does that sound chipper so far? And then this really old, pasty-faced, scowling mortician comes to town, and he kills people, and he shrinks them down, and he sends them back to his planet, and then the kid and his brother and an ice cream vendor, they try to stop him. Can I have $1 million, please?
Luckily, that one wasn't focus tested to death, you know what I mean?
Oh, it never would have got off the ground, but you know, that was a different time mm-hmm. in horror films. That was the, you know, for me, the golden age, for my golden age, for guys of my
vintage
of age, golden age would be like from 68 to, you know, stop at 87 and take a break. You know, that's the golden age. My God, the 70s and the early to mid 80s was horror central.
We just talked about some great movies, and when we were discussing, you know, having on the podcast, you suggested, you know, a couple of movies, one being The Devil's Reign, and the other one being Kingdom of the Spiders, and these are definitely drive-in era movies starring one of our country's greatest exports, William Shatner.
The Shat.
We're gonna have a Shatnathon.
You know it, a Shatnathon. We're gonna shout out a couple flicks by the man.
Yep.
I don't have a lot of Shatner expressions.
Well,
he was awesome.
We're going to have a bit of a shit-a-thon, I think.
Yeah, from the, you know, sublime to the ridiculous now. Yeah. I mean, Devil's Reign, this one was odd. I mean, it was sort of like a bad high school production of Arthur Miller's The Crucible. Like, mixed with, like, Eyes Wide Shut. Like, I didn't know what to make. Like, I had no... I didn't know what to expect going into this. Like, I love Ernest Borgnine. And his eyebrows. And I love the Poseidon Adventure. But this thing, I didn't know what to make of this.
Hold on. Was this your first time seeing The Devil's Reign?
It wasn't for me, but it was for Chris.
Yes.
Oh my god. Again, this was one when I was probably about 10 years old living abroad that I saw, and this was probably this and Kingdom of the Spiders that we're going to talk about later were my introduction to Shatner.
Weird.
I thought he was this great movie actor who decided to slum on some sci-fi show.
Well, the fact you thought he was a great movie actor is a little suspect, but I mean, you know, the one thing, I mean, we got to say, I mean, The Devil's Reign, it's a satanic panic sort of movie in the sense, you know, and it was made in the wake of The Exorcist when everything, you know, satanic was, you know, in vogue, and we have this character played by Ernest Borgnine, Corbis, right?
And he's, yes, Corbis Todd! Damn you!
One of the greatest lines in the movie. In fact, I take notes when I write these movies. I'm looking at my notes right now, and I have that in all caps. Corbis, goddamn you! But I mean,
this was probably my introduction to Shatner.
Mm-hmm.
And but you were saying about the satanic panic, Exorcist coming out the wake of The Exorcist. You know, Rosemary's Baby, the tail end of the '60s before. Satanic movies were all the rage in the 70s, and what I love about The Devil's Reign and movies of their ilk is that what people don't realize is the 70s movies are downers, a lot
yeah.
of them.
Yeah.
They're very serious, they're very glum, you know, very little humor in them, and always the endings, you find me a 70s horror movie with an upbeat ending. And I'll, you know, I'll fly out your guys' way and buy you a beer. It's not going to happen. They were such downers.
Yeah.
But I look back, and that's part of what I love about them, because they said, no, you know what, we're going to end the movie like this. You know, again, like you were saying, no test audiences to saying we have to have an upbeat ending here. They went for it. All mm-hmm. of them, you know? Screw it.
And the other thing, too, I mean, these movies are so lovably goofy because, I mean, here we have, you know, William Shatner, and he's, you know, goofing amongst himself, but then we have Ernest Borgnine, and he's basically playing the devil or one of the devil's, you know, henchmen, right? Or, like, you know, the chief henchman of the devil. And what I find hilarious is that the producers originally wanted to get Vincent Price to play Corbis. They didn't get Vincent Price, so instead they got Ernest Borgnine. Now, I mean, you know, how different can you get? So instead of like the Master of Menace, you've got this like this gap-toothed, pudgy, short, weird eyebrowed guy. And this is Satan. You know what I mean? Like, it's bizarre. Ernest Borgnine, of all people, you know? Never mind, you got like Ian Lupino in there, you got Eddie Albert, and a riveting performance from John Travolta, which we'll talk about, right? But Ernest Borgnine as Satan. Unbelievable.
Well, listen, he wouldn't be your second choice as a horror icon?
Oh, hey, yeah. Forget about your Christopher Lees or your Peter Cushings, you know? I mean, it's like Christ.
Go right to Borgnine.
Go, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Listen, it's the love boat of horror movies.
It totally is, yeah. Horror. You know, the thing is, like, Corbis, again, like, Ernest Borgnine, you can't help but love him, because he's so cute. And Corbis is cuddly. You know what I mean?
He is, and yet, you know, there's, like you said, it's a very schizophrenic movie. The scene back with Martin Fife and his plan
mm-hmm.
is absolutely horrible. It's by far the funniest scene for me in the movie, when Corbis walks up to Martin Fife, of course, played by William Shatner, and and he's had a lot of bad rugs, but this one is. And when Corvus is saying that someone has taken the book, the book where all the souls of Satan are in, mm-hmm. someone has taken the book, and then all of a sudden the minister and all of the good Christian folk are outside with their torches ready to burn, and Corvus turns to Martin Fife and says, "It was thine wife," and Shather in all his glory says, "I had nothing to do with it."
And it's great too because, you know, you get all these different facets of Corvus. You get him in his cowboy duds, you get him resplendent in his red robe.
In his Quaker duds, you get, like, yeah, a Puritan.
You get Pioneer Corvus, you get Goatface Corvus, you know?
Well, yeah, you get, here's the thing. So there's that scene, which is the worst. Now, for me, by far, the best scene in the movie, and I love the whole movie because it's so batshit, goofy and crazy, is that scene in the desert with Shatner and Borgnine.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a really well-played scene.
Yeah, it was like the good, the bad, and the ugly or something.
With the two of them just standing there talking.
Mm.
You're watching that and I'm going, no, this part's actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
Basically until Shatner comes bursting out of the church and does the 40-yard dash for the car, which is brings it back down to the level it should be, which is B movie heaven.
Mm-hmm.
where he's running back to his bar and he's dashing this guy and he's kirking this guy and he's kirking that guy.
and you gotta love, like,
for people who look for the good in every horror movie,
as we do, yep. Mm-hmm.
As they do, I say to people, yeah. It is a great cheesy movie,
mm-hmm.
but that scene in the desert with just the two of them talking, it's shot really well and it's written really well, and it's a shame. Well, no, it's not a shame because it's a great movie, but it shows you maybe what, with a little more time and care, the movie could have been.
Although I will say one thing: when you say that the scene in the desert was written very well, there was that one scene where. Where Shatner takes some water and it's bitter and he spits it out as only William Shatner can. Yeah, and then Corvus goes, and this is like a non sequitur, "Sweet way to end the thirst, isn't it?" You know, it's like bitter water, sweet way to end the thirst. So there is even a little there was some goofiness there as well.
But
he's the devil goat of Satan, therefore the bitterness would be sweet.
Ah, interesting, interesting.
And I gotta say, I agree that it was kind of a good, the bad, and the ugly kind of vibe in that scene, but we also forgot to mention Tom Skerritt, who I think was poking around in the dark for about 25 minutes, like, interminably. Like, I couldn't take it anymore. And obviously he's, well, maybe known to people of our age as, like, the love interest of the woman in Cheers.
Yes, yes, indeed. Yeah.
Like, Mr. Drake. Evan Drake.
Yeah.
The you know, the cold millionaire. But yeah, he was just endlessly poking around in the dark with his soft voice and his giant mustache. I couldn't take it.
It's so weirdly paced.
Yeah.
It starts out with it Shatner against Borgnine, good versus evil, and then that's it. See you, Shatner. Okay. Hit the benches. Bring in your brother now and his wife. And speaking of your, you know, your soft spoken, you have Eddie Albert.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Greenacres. Dr. Sam Richards. And he's so, I don't know what movie they flew him in from. But it's such a mishmash of people. Like I said, it's literally the Love Boat cast of horror, because I don't know who the casting director on this was, but man, I would have loved to have had the drugs they were taking.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I really like the opening credits. I mean, it's like all these Hieronymus Bosch paintings, right? And you have all these like ominous, like, help me, get me out of here on the soundtrack. That really sets up a really cool eerie vibe. But then the rest of the movie does not, you know, live up to the promise of those credits. So instead of having that wonderful opening, they should just have like a bunch of like life preservers, you know, with these actors' faces inside, you know, including Gavin McLeod and whoever played Isaac the bartender. As you said, you know, it's a level of horror. And then another thing I found endearingly goofy is that when Corbis, well, first of all, before I even get to that, what about the amulet? How ridiculous looking was that amulet?
A giant amulet.
I love that thing. That's like a Flava Flav worn amulet.
Would you wear one of those if you got your hands on a replica amulet?
I would, if I went to a horror convention, I would wear it just to see if anyone recognized it, and then that person would become my best friend.
And then, so we have, when Corbis, I mean, there's, at one point he summons a snake, and to me it looks like he's taking like a really satisfying shit as he's doing it, you know what I mean?
Behold my movement!
Yeah. And then, when all of a sudden, you know, he pops up as the devil, again, I'm going to say he's adorable. He's like the goat-faced Corbis, but he looks like, you've seen, have you seen the canon film adaptation, Master of the Universe?
Yes.
He looked like Orko in that movie with like a bad white wig. It was just like, I don't know, I found him to be so cute and cuddly.
I thought he looked like Newt from the Hercules cartoon.
That too, yep. Now, another thing that makes this movie extremely notable is it was the acting debut of a young John Travolta.
I know, like, eyes play a prominent feature in this movie, but I probably blinked and missed that.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, he had one line, and it was basically, blasphemer, blasphemer.
And then I think that sounds like that was dubbed.
What an
awesome... It didn't sound like his voice, because I think if they had used... Well, it would have been even better, actually.
Yeah, Vinnie Barbarino.
Hey, yo, blasphemer. Blasphemer.
Well, the accents, like, it just, I can't buy, like, someone who came over on the Mayflower with a voice like Ernest Borgnine. Like, with all his thine and thous and these.
I forgot about that, yeah.
Thine before me. Yeah, and you got Travolta on the desert going... Hey, over here, there's a blasphemer over here.
Oh, Lord. And then the other thing is all about the book. And the book is basically...
interminable. Yeah,
it's
book.
Everybody who's like sold their souls to Satan, written in blood. It's really just a yellow pages for Satan. You know what I mean? Like, but,
totally.
You know, without the book, thou art nothing.
Yeah. It is yellow pages, or it's like a portable Facebook, you know.
Yeah, it's his friends list.
He has so many likes, and but I couldn't. I still, you know, I rewatched, and I, oh my god, I've seen this movie probably, I don't even want to count, but I had to watch it again just because I can't stop watching it. And for the life of me, I still can't figure out how the devil's ring works.
Yeah. Well, you know,
do you want to be in the rain? You don't want to be in the rain. But if you're in the container that holds the rain, that's bad. Right?
Yeah.
Well, as Milli Vanilli sang, blame it on the rain.
Yes, they did. So I don't understand if you want to be in the rain or you want to be... Because when they're out of the rain, or no, when they're in the actual rain, but out of... when the box breaks, then rain is very bad. And when they're inside the rain, they're crying and screaming
in agony.
And moaning.
Yeah.
And rain's bad.
Nobody seems to enjoy being in the rain.
rain is just bad. And then the book, so they need, Corbis needs, let me get this straight, Corbis needs the book. Okay. So he needs the book just to hold on to it.
Yeah, something to that effect. You know, I mean, look, that was the MacGuffin of the movie, right? I mean, the book was basically just to get this ridiculous plot going. But...
Well, maybe it's a first edition. It'll just appreciate in value.
maybe it'll show up on American Pickers or something.
Yeah, or Pawn Stars. You'll have, like, Chumley trying to praise it or something. You know? This is a...
Antique Roadshow. Yeah. What's the first edition Corvus? Ooh.
Yeah. Well, I got to summon an expert to, appraise this thing for me, and all of a sudden, you know, the great Satan himself, you know, well, hey, written in blood. That's a
good
plus. You know,
it's gotten in the original, you know, type O.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And what about Satanic Shatner? You know, once he kind of, you know, gets taken over, and, you know, the great special effects of the eyes and, you know, those soulless black eyes. Ugh.
You know, it's the downside of having high def now.
It's true.
It is, because you can practically see the black mesh behind the eyes on the mask that they're, the mask piece that they're wearing, you know? Was this mask mold the one used later on for Halloween, or was it a Shatner mask from Star Trek that was used for Halloween?
I believe it was a Star Trek one. It was, yeah. They said it was a Captain Kirk mask turned inside out and painted white. So, yeah.
Okay, right. But you can tell right away as soon as you see him, you're like, what the hell is Michael Myers doing in this?
But you know what? That's actually an interesting segue into our next shot in the shit, Kingdom of the Spiders, because, you know, we're talking about high def and, you know, like effects and so on and so forth. Now, this is a movie where, I mean, if they were to make it today, you would have just all these ridiculous CGI spiders. But in this movie, what we love, Chris and I, we love animals attack movies. And
yes.
Are you a fan as well? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, my bust-off that's coming out today is Grizzly.
Awesome. What do you think of Food of the Gods? That's my favorite.
What do you... Listen, it has Marjorie Gordon.
There you go, man.
That's the automatic stamp of approval. You have Marjorie Gordon as a football player.
With his white man's throne, his reedy voice, you know, and he's just like,
I'm already there. And then you throw in some giant rats and chickens. Well, settle in with some popcorn. Let's go.
Yeah, just like Devil's Reign, we had Isla Lupino as well. So I mean, you know, but I love it because it's not just one animal; it's like every animal, you know.
Yeah.
So
the Noah's Ark of horror movies.
Totally. But I mean, well, I said King of the Spiders. I mean, these I'm. You know, it takes a lot to scare me, but I don't like spiders. I don't like tarantulas. And there were thousands of tarantulas in this one, man. And they were real tarantulas, you know?
They were real tarantulas. They bought 5,000 real tarantulas at $10 a pop. They had them rounded up by tarantula wranglers, I guess, from Mexico. So they spent $50,000 of their budget on spiders. And then... Oh, God bless him. Pretty much killed half of them, I think.
Well, one thing, I mean, right from the start, people don't appreciate fonts as much as... I love the font for the title and the opening credits. I don't know, there's something very suitable about it. And then we had that wonderful song, Peaceful Verde Valley, sung by the great Dorsey Burnett.
Yep. Yes, down in peaceful Verde Valley.
Right. Now, of course, the word verde means green. But I didn't see...
irony alert. Yeah.
There was no green in that valley.
How green is my valley? Yeah.
How green isn't my valley?
Shatner must have just been hanging out in the desert. Like, I don't know who picked his roles here, but, like, both these movies, there's, like, Arizona, New Mexico, whatever, he was just there.
I think he just drove over from the set of The Devil's Reign onto this one.
Well, it's funny because I was going to say the one connecting thread is Shatner in a cowboy hat. Because in both these movies, we got, you know, the great Shatner, you know, kind of like moseying on up his great Western finery. And in this movie...
I was just going to say, for the purpose of referring to Shatner as Rat Hanson.
We have to refer to him as Rat
Hanson. Yeah.
And what a...
That's one of the greatest names in the history of film.
And I guess because he was a proficient billiards player,
no,
right?
No, he wasn't the proficient.
Oh, he wasn't. Oh, I was going to say, because if you rack, like, a lot of balls, then you lose a lot, maybe. Like, you just keep losing, you keep racking.
Right? I love the explanation of the name. So how did you get the name Rack? Oh, well, my brother John and I mean, John was such a wonderful, John who died in Nam, you know. I was such a wonderful pool player, and he would just beat me and beat me and beat me, and they just say, rack it up, rack it up, and the name just stuck. I mean, oh, God.
Well, I mean, Shatner now does have man boobs, so maybe he does have a rack. I don't know.
Exactly. Who knows what girdle was lying underneath that shirt.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, I liked about this, I mean, he plays basically a vet in this movie, right?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking myself, you know, like, I'm not a Star Trek fan at all, but of course, you know, they always have that, like, you know, damn it, Jim, I'm a this, not a, I'm
none
a doctor,
that,
not
yeah.
a this, well, you know, I'm an animal doctor, not a doctor, you know what I mean, in this one.
Well, he likes to look after the horses, he likes to look after Colby's horses.
Oh, poor Colby, poor Woody Strode.
He had it rough, man.
Totally.
He had it rough.
I mean, you know, you're in Calgary. I mean, that's, you know, like bovine country, right? So, you know what? Well, oh yeah. I mean, exactly. I mean, Alberta, you know, and so you know what the value of a good cattle is, right? So.
Absolutely. I got two in my backyard right now. I'm firming them up for next year's auction. So hopefully it goes well.
Yep.
And you gotta love how one was transported in the back of the car there.
Yeah, slap it in, no problem. But you know, we're speaking of Shatner. If you compare his performance in Devil's Reign to Kingdom of the Spiders, he's actually pretty subdued in this one compared to Devil's Reign.
I kind of thought the opposite. You know, it's interesting you say that, because I thought that these were there was more Shatner-isms in this movie. For example, when he's that wasn't him. That was actually Strode. But I don't know. Like, I just found there was just more, like, I don't know. For example, like, I mean, this is way near the end of the movie, right? But as he's, you know, in the basement, and he's crawling up the, and he's covered in the spiders, you know, and he's just crawling up the staircase so slow, you know. That to me was Shatner's finest.
It is, but probably in the dialogue scenes, he's a little more laid back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like at the beginning of Devil's Reign when he's talking to Ida Lupino, not now, mother, not now, mother. He's a little more laid back in this one, and I mean, it's still Shatner, and I don't want him completely, you know, laid back.
No.
I think it, as far as B movies go, and as far as, you know, when Nature Attack movies goes, it helps give the movie a little more credibility, because I think it's a well-made thriller. I think especially compared to, as much as I, God help me, love The Devil's Reign, it's actually a tidy little made thriller overall, mm-hmm. Kingdom of the Spider.
I got to admit, I really enjoyed his Captain Kirk kind of womanizing of the entomologist.
Oh, Tiffany Bowling.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah. He says, like, oh, you had dinner last night, and I know you'll have dinner again, so how about joining me this time? I was like, what a great pitch.
That's a fantastic line. That's an absolutely great line. It is a great pickup line.
Another thing I found quite hilarious was when, you know, they're saying, like, you know, of course, and this is when the spiders are just all over the place, and the entomologist says to the owner of the inn or whatever, we don't have time to explain, Emma. And then she explains it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, of course.
Yeah. And what William Shatner running and leaping through hundreds of spiders, that was worth the price of admission.
Well, I think it was in his contract that he had to do some running.
Yep.
You know. It absolutely had to be. I know. Now that you point out all these Shatnerisms, the Shat is Shat, and that's that.
Exactly.
Directed by John Budcardos, who would go on to do The Dark, mm-hmm. With William Devane, which I really like, and Mutant with Bo Hopkins, which is okay, from the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, at least it has a cons- compared to The Devil's Reign, it has a consistency of tone. Mm.
Yeah, true. It may be a little...
Spiders invade, they defend against the spiders, they lose to the spiders. You know, you can leave the room, go to the bathroom, and come back and be fairly certain you're going to be watching the same movie.
It's so true. You know what? Now you mention it, it is so fucking true. Every scene, just somebody all of a sudden, like, oh, there's some spiders. One of my favorites is the poor girl on the swing.
Oh, that was great, yeah.
Oh, God.
And then another one was, I guess she might have been at one time, I forget the actress's name, the wife of Sammy Davis Jr.
Who?
Yes, Altavis.
Yes, and at one, right. One point her...
At that time, Altavis, she was married to Sammy, and I don't know if it was part of, because from what I understand, and I don't want any lawsuits, that Sammy Davis was allegedly a Satanist.
Wow. Well, that ties into it. I guess he's in the book. Would he be in Corbis's book? We would know, you know?
I know, they were in the wrong movie. Yeah. Maybe if she was with Sammy, maybe part of the satanic deal was she had to blow her fingers off and kick him with a spider.
Yeah, as opposed to just shaking the tarantula off, you have to blow your own hand off.
That
interesting,
was
you mentioned
so funny.
And we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Anton LaVey. Like, we forgot his involvement in The Devil's Reign.
Sure, let's toggle back and forth. Good old Anton, technical advisor on The Devil's Reign.
Yep.
And I'm assuming all those ceremonies are what they would actually perform.
Yeah, what is the Church of Satan up to these days? What is the Church of Satan up to these days?
You know, I'm not sure. I think they've probably fallen on some, I don't know, have you ever seen do they actually have, like, a brick-and-mortar location?
Not I think they went online.
Next to the Methodist, you know, church on the corner of blah, 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 yeah. Or the Roman Catholic church down the street. I think that would be so cool to see. Not that I would go, because I'm not really church folk, but you know what? Like, you're supposed to be the Church of Satan, all that is evil. You can't. What are you too scared to put up a building?
That's true. Now, getting back to since we're just going back and forth, getting back to King of the Spiders. Another thing I really really loved was when the crop duster is up in the air. And, of course, there's going to be a spider, right? And,
or two. Seven.
Or, yeah, 20. And then I'm thinking, I don't know why, my brain just went to, like, Snakes on a Plane, Samuel Jackson. You know, get these motherfucking spiders off this motherfucking plane, you know? Like, and then it just...
I was just going to say, I have trouble with that scene because anytime I watch it with my wife... Mm-hmm. She calls the kids back into the room, and they all laugh hysterically because apparently that's how I scream.
Oh yeah, like, yeah, indeed. I mean, he you know, not to be politically correct, but he screamed like a girl,
like a 4-year-old scared schoolgirl. Apparently, that's how I scream. So my family gets a big blast out of that.
Well, I don't know. One thing I learned from King of the Spiders is keep a lot of fire extinguishers handy. They seem to be quite effective.
I've never seen, you know, the fire department must be so proud of that lodge because they had to have like 62 fire extinguishers, I think. And also, unlike anyone I know who has a fire extinguisher for decoration.
I don't have one. Do you have one?
No.
Do you have one, Scott?
No, I do not, no.
But I don't know, I mean, if ever, you know, we were attacked by, you know, hills and mountains filled with tarantulas, I know now, forget insecticide, forget, you know, well, that's, you know, basically what caused the whole thing to begin with, right? They became immune and developed their toxins 50 times more.
Yeah, it's the DDT, man. It's the DDT.
There's always got to be something.
Yeah, that was a really subtle message.
And, you know, it's some kind of imbalance. It's always like, it's just explained away. Some kind of imbalance, you know? It's all about the balance. Have you seen, I guess, this, we're kind of getting away from King of the Spiders, one of my absolute favorite animal attack movies, besides The Food of the Gods, is Day of the Animals.
Day of the Animals. Well, yeah. I'm a huge William Gerber fan. And
yep.
Yes, I'm doing... Grizzly Today, and his follow-up movie was Day of the Animals.
Right.
And for anyone who hasn't seen it, if you want to see the sight of Leslie Nielsen bare-chested fighting a bear...
And who among us doesn't?
Well, I mean, that movie, we did a podcast on that. Actually, we did a whole episode on that movie, but I mean... Wow. The character arc of Leslie Nielsen, hotshot, you know? How he just becomes so savage, you know what I mean? And just
if you did a drinking game for the amount of times he says hotshot,
yes,
you would be taken to the hospital in about 20 minutes.
Mm. And another thing we really liked about the movie, too, I mean, what do you know what year that was made exactly?
Day of the Animal was 77. 77, the same year as Kingdom of the Spiders.
Okay, so Leslie Nielsen is one of these people that you can say he's ageless because he always looks old. You know what I mean?
like Steve Martin.
Like he looks exactly the same.
Like those silver foxes, Steve Martin, Leslie Nielsen, yeah, they never age. The only way you can tell is if you see Leslie Nielsen from the waist up, he looks the same. But as he gets older, he gets so bow-legged, you could drive a Volkswagen.
Oh, my God. Another thing I've learned from King of the Spiders, though, again, is that, you know, if there are hordes of rampaging tarantulas stepping on them, forget it. Just pull out your handy shotgun and just shoot them. Especially if they're in your hand, you know?
when they look out the window from the lodge and they're going to make it for the motorhome, and you see, like, in a big field, you see, like, maybe 200 spiders spread out. And they say, I don't know if we can make it. Well, you're right. You could, other than walking slowly backwards... and falling over and rolling yourself through the spiders on the lawn, I don't see how you couldn't make it.
It's quite true, actually. Oh, and you know what's funny?
What I also love is the entomologist who, one of the first scenes we see her in her hotel room after she has her shower, and she discovers the tarantula in her drawer, and she's so loving and caring for it. And by the time they get to the lodge, she's like the biggest spider hater on the face of the earth.
And what about the classic rural urban animosity? Like at the beginning, she comes into town and she's just these are all a bunch of hicks and everything. Mistakes, the good vet for like a gas station attendant. Like it's.
I can change your tire, but I can't change it for less than 30. I've got 5.
That was great, yeah. Actually, I think he might have been in Devil's Reign, too. He reminded me of, that I didn't even know the character's name. The guy that lived with Ida Lupino, they had that little man Friday, that old man,
Well, the manservant, John.
Yeah, John, exactly. He sort of reminded me of that guy. Like, I got five.
They had no wife.
Yeah, exactly. Almost gave me a bit of a Torgo vibe from Manos, Hands of Fate.
or a Gabby Hayes from the old westerns. I thought he was going to say, there's gold up there! While you're looking for Corbett's, give me some gold!
Oh my God. Any other observations of King of the Spiders?
Unless you're doing like a 7-hour podcast, King of the Spiders could go on forever. For anyone who's scared to watch it, I would like to say, though, after hearing us talk about it, it's actually, and sincerely, and actually really pretty good B-marathon.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like spiders, it's not going to change your opinion. It's reasonably well acted, it's reasonably well written and directed. Spiders suck ass, I agree with you 150%. As for other observations, it's a great 90-minute fun ride that has, and again, we were talking about the downer endings of the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
How do you top that ending?
That's right. Yeah.
When I saw that when I was 10, that blew my mind.
That was incredible.
That absolutely blew my mind. When he peels open that first board off the window, and again, I think he's more subdued in this because in some occasions, because when he looks out that window and you just see like the blue reflection coming in through the window, the look on his face, like he can't believe, like, what the fuck is going on here? it's just a tremendous little moment that sets up that final shot, which plays again much better on an old VHS copy, the tracking at the bottom, than it does in high def, because it's a really piss poor matte painting.
So, if you were to recommend any other Choice Shatner films other than these two we discussed.
Oh boy, you know, as far as horror goes, if I'm going horror, this was kind of his 1-2 punch of the 70s. Yeah.
He wasn't visiting ours.
He made another movie, and it's not staying in my head right now, where he played a guy who murdered women. He was like a lounge lizard type guy, and he would take women back to his apartment and murder them. It was maybe called Impulse or Repulsion or...
Yeah.
I forget. And it was from the early 70s.
Uh-huh.
And I forget what it was called. But as far as horror goes, this is the 1-2 Shatner punch that you need. If you can't get enough Shatner and you like horror from the 70s, it's a tremendous double feature. It truly is.
It totally is. And it was, you know, I thank you for, because I've seen these movies before, but I hadn't revisited them in years, so it was a real treat to watch them in succession. So thank you for suggesting these two.
Oh, my pleasure. I absolutely, and since The Devil's Reign is hard, it's hard to defend, but it's a lot of fun, and like you said, it's goofy, and it's nonsensical, and it's dry, and it's wet, and it's moist, and there's Keenan Wynn yelling, and there's Ernest Borgnine with his cuddly devil goatness.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot of wonderful, and Kingdom of the Spiders, as ridiculous as the premise is, actually plays as a better straightforward movie, but yet, if you're looking for it, all the goodies that you need from a Shat Fest are present and accounted for.
Mm-hmm. Well, Devil's Reign is hard to defend, but easy to love. I mean, because of its sheer goofiness, I think. So, I would recommend it, you know, especially if you're a big Josh Travolta fan. Because that is probably his best performance, other than Pulp Fiction, you know.
Listen, you have to know how he started with the Church of Scientology, which was Julie Preston, Tom Skerritt's wife in the movie. Joan Prather, she's the one who introduced him to Scientology.
See, I did not know that.
Very... On the set of this movie.
Interesting.
So on the set of The Devil's Reign, about a satanic cult, he learned all about the Church of L. Ron Hubbard.
There you go. Xenu. Good old Xenu. Well, Scott, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And...
Yes, well,
I was going to say, if our listeners want to read some of your stuff, I mean, you mentioned, so you're on the Daily Dead.
Yes, Daily Dead. If they go on the Daily Dead website and look up on the side, it's a little blurb that'll say Drive and Dust Offs. They're all there. I have 24 or 25 of them. And then, as well, read the Daily Dead every day, daily, and dead, and with the dailiness. And they can also find me on Twitter at Phantasm2 and give me a follow back, and we'll chat about all the great Shatness that's out there.
And just look for the Harry Burt Reynolds lying on the rug on Twitter, right?
Yes, that is my Abby. I figured if you're going to have an Abby, you might as well go as studly as you can.
There you go. Once again, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's truly been an honor, and it's been a blast.
Thank you.